And welcome back to Coast, Jay Widener, our guest. Jay, I've got up here on my computer the second set of images from the cross. And if we can, if you would explain that to people, specifically people who don't have computers, what we're looking for. There are four pictures. This one on the left, the upper left, has what looks like four upside-down triangles or pyramids and then a cross in between. What is that?
Okay, that's the quadrant with the four unusual A's in it.
Yes.
Okay, those A's have a strange right-angle crossbar as opposed to a straight crossbar.
Uh-huh.
And they're put inside an oval, and this is the hieroglyph of the universe, according to what Fulcanelli says. It is the complete macrocosm of our world. And what he's saying is that each of those A's represents a quadrant of time or an age, and that there are four quadrants, four ages, and that these are the four cycles that exist within the 26,000-year precession of the equinoxes. Interestingly, the right-angle crossbar of the A's is very similar to the Freemasonic symbol and of Freemasons, and in fact is probably why Fulcanelli tells us that he believes the cross was built by a, quote, master mason. So the four A's are really the one symbol on the pedestal, and this is a pedestal. So those are four different sides of this four-sided pedestal.
How big is this symbol in reality?
The symbol is only about 3.5 feet high and about 2 feet wide.
Okay.
And it sits right across from the moon, which is the fairy tale moon. And that is an eclipsed moon. And it is very symbolic of time, and the moon is an alchemical symbol of time, how you measure time in short waves as opposed to long waves with the precession or with planetary movements. The moon, of course, takes 28 days to go around, and you can measure it by months. The other side of the cross has a star, which is an exploding star, and on the other side of the star is the angry sun face. The angry sun face has four six-pointed stars in each of the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, people who know the tarot know, of course, that number 17 in the tarot deck is the star, and it looks just like the star that's on the cross of Hendaye. Number 18 is the moon, and it looks just like the moon on the cross of Hendaye. Number 19 is the sun, and it looks very similar to the sun there. And number 20 in the tarot is the Day of Judgment, indicating that the four A's, and Fulcanelli definitely tells us this in the chapter, that the four A's indicate the tarot card, the trump card, the Day of Judgment, and that is what the cross is talking about. And indeed it is.
All symbols.
Yeah, so these symbols also have to do with eclipses, the fact that they're juxtapositioned against each other, so that they're the exploding star is behind the sun. The exploding star is the center of the galaxy, and when it lines up with the sun, then something odd happens to the sun and causes it to do odd things. To heat up, apparently, is what it looks like it's doing. So temperatures, as end of time approach, will get hotter, not just here on Earth, but in all of the planets in the solar system, and indeed they are. So this is indication, and Fulcanelli warns us, that this age will end in fire. And when I began this research, I thought possibly he was talking about a nuclear conflagration or something.
Good point.
But now, with the temperatures getting hotter and hotter every year, the Pacific Northwest just went through a winter where we literally had no rain, no snow ski season at all for the first time ever.
Ever, yeah.
And so I'm wondering, you know, what is going on? I know that things are changing quickly and getting warmer in various places, and the storms are getting worse. So I think all these things are a part of this lineup, this quadrant of A's, that every 6,500 years or every one quarter of the precession, an event happens. And this event triggers all of the events that happen in the age that follows.
Okay, we have Mark from the state of Washington wants to know if these alchemists had anything to do with white powder of gold, if that was used in building the cathedrals, what role white powder might have played in the transcending dimensions, if anything.
Well, now, the white powder gold. The stuff that's being made today, I frankly wouldn't take because I would be afraid of getting sick from the minerals. However, it is very interesting to know Paul LaViolette did ice core drillings, and he found that every 26,000 years, all through these ice core drillings in Greenland, were layers of iridium and rhodium. And we know that white gold is made up of iridium and rhodium. And so there seems to be influxes of waves of iridium and rhodium, which are deep space elements, which flow onto our planet somehow every time that there is the big whammy, which is every 26,000 years. Now, I believe, of course, that just like I'm sure Mark does, that this iridium and rhodium causes a lack of resistance in what I, or what alchemists refer to as their light body, which is the body of light, that body, covert body, which exists around us, like in the shape of an egg. It's a higher dimensional body. And once that body is enlivened, it can live longer and it can know more. It's like synaptic responses have been blown wide open. Two of the things that the Philosopher's Stone promises is total gnosis and extended life. And so the white powder is, I believe, there's a natural white powder and that it exists here on Earth in various places, but it's not born out of a mineral necessarily. It may be a mineral that's extracted from a plant. But none of that really is going to matter because the white powder is only used when you're in the middle of a time period. When you're in the shift of the time period, anything can happen and all systems can go. So the white powder is less useful now than it would have been, say, 300 years ago.
Joe from Fairbanks, Alaska, wants to know how bad things will get between now and 2012.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to get really weird. That's what I think. I think things are going to get really, really weird. And they're already weird, but I think they're going to get weirder. And I don't know what to say because, the things that have happened have been so jaw-dropping that and so quick that I can't imagine. I will say this. It looks to me like the people in charge are scrambling to avert something. And what that is, I don't know. And they're preparing, systems and things to make sure that they're aware of many things happening at once. So they're as worried about things as I am. I think you're going to see a lot of changes. I think, though, at the same time, Nostradamus said there'd be kind of like a bifurcation at the end of time in which a lot of people would lose it, and a lot of people, and a small group of people would actually gain enlightenment. And that is, I think, the great promise, is that those who stay even and those who stay cool will have great benefits coming our way very soon. All the secrets that there are about to be released over the next 7 years.
It is going to be soon. You're right. Jim from Pennsylvania wants to get back to the pictures that were on the cross, and the one about the eclipsing moon has a facial profile. Any meaning there?
Well, that's a good question. The way I met Richard Hoagland was back in the early 90s. I was working on the moon section of the Cross of Henday, and I wondered, going through the literature, the ancient literature, about all the stories about beings that lived on the moon. So when I met Hoagland, I went through some of his work, and we helped each other try to look at some of the odd things that NASA has found. And so I'm not sure if the man face on the moon is telling us that there's intelligence on the moon, or it could be many things. For instance, it also looks like a boat with people on it, a curved Egyptian boat, a bark boat. And it could be talking about Noah's Ark. It could be a lot of things that it means.
Jay, the travels that you've undertaken included an area that fascinates me. You went into mysterious caves under the Andes Mountains in Peru, right?
Yes, I did.
What was so unusual about that trip?
Well, The inscription on the cross, the Latin inscription, I deciphered it, and it told me in two different decipherings, and you can get this in the video or in the books, how I did this. It told me that there was a cross in a town called Urcos in Peru, 20 miles away from Cusco, and it also told me to go look, or whoever deciphered it, to go look at the caves in Cusco. So I made a trip down to Peru, and with my Quechua guide, I found incredible, not just around Cusco, but literally everywhere, cave openings. Many had been sealed shut by the Peruvian government. I found thousands of tales of caves, and that they ran under the mountains for miles and miles, and that they were made by humans thousands of years ago. I looked into the secret knowledge of the Inca and found out that the Incans believed that they had survived a long time ago in the caves, and they'd come out to start a new civilization. I looked at the work of author Posansky, who was a Bolivian scientist who looked into the ruins of Tiwanaku, and found out that he pretty much proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that the ruins in Bolivia were built 15,000 years ago. So, you know, they were built before the 13,000-year catastrophe. Possibly the caves were built at that time to prepare, because their science was more advanced than our science, and they knew that they had to get underground. Of course, a great place to be underground would be high up in the mountains where you wouldn't be hit by tidal waves or anything. And again, I also found, and this is in the book, that Tibet also has these rumors of, and other people have actually
like underground them. Cities.
Yeah.
Big ones.
Ossendowski, a Russian writer in the 20s, actually went in them and visited them. And, you know, and they're, again, waiting until the end of time. That's what they tell them.
People are still there?
Yeah, they're like holding certain kinds of knowledge and then releasing it slowly. So, you know, it's kind of strange that the powers that be never censor the web. I keep finding it amazing that...
I bet they're trying to, Jay.
I'm sure they are, but they haven't. And I would almost bet that they're not going to be able to, because the keepers of the light have their hand firmly on the rudder of history, and they're not going to allow the obfuscation of information to occur so close to 2012.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The technology that they might have possessed, I'm talking about the ancients now, Do you think it was very advanced?
I think it was different. I don't think it was necessarily technology. You know, Michael Cremo has gone back and searched through all the records and found incredible information about advanced civilizations that existed, but he really never finds a transistor or a capacitor or anything like that. And that's because in the previous ages, we didn't need technology. We had incredible powers. I go back to Lord of the Rings and the elves. We had more control over the hyperdimensional relationship between dimensions, and through that, we could manipulate the world. But as we fell into the Dark Age in 6,500 years ago, these abilities atrophied and disappeared. Until now, they're gone, and we're replacing those abilities with technology and kind of a pseudo-magic, I call it. So technology is like a pseudo-magic. However, that doesn't mean that they didn't have highly advanced civilizations. I'm just saying that they were vastly different in ways that we can't conceive of.
Do you think that on December 21st, 2012, that we will see some kind of significant change?
I think that the change actually will already be done. I think it's merely a marker. I believe that actually the change started in 1992 and is finishing in 2012. I think things are right on time. I think that the midpoint marker in this 20-year cycle, which the Mayans worshipped and said was the most important cycle of time, started in 93, 92, that time period. But if you look at the midpoint between that, it's almost exactly at 9-1-1. And I think 9-1-1 is a very significant event in many ways, and I think that it's only now becoming apparent how really significant historically it is. And it's changed things, and it's proved a lot of things to people that you know.
And it's still changing things.
Yeah, and the thing is that, but it's opening us up too. We're being open to wider realities by events like that. We're beginning to consider things that weren't really being considered much before. And it's very interesting to watch. I call it the viral meme. It's like a thought process that spreads out like a virus, and it once it hits, it penetrates. It doesn't go away, and these things are getting out in ways that are just kind of jaw-dropping, I think.
The Pope is going to be buried on a eclipse, and some of the eclipses that have occurred or will occur in the next year or so. Any special meaning?
I think that there's more strange planetary transitions and eclipses in the period from, say, 2000 to 2012 than at any period in astrologically in a long time. And I think we're going to see a lot of very odd things begin occurring. Again, this is all a finish, a big grand final to the Iron Age and the Age of Materialism. And it's something that we all have to go through. So this science of the eclipses and what effect it's having on us is, I believe, only going to begin emerging in the next two or three years.
Yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about what you think about the building that the Sphinx might be built on.
Well, I think that a lot of Egypt has been buried. I think that if they had the temerity, they could begin digging down, and they would find that the soils of the Nile have flooded the area with maybe 100 or 200 feet of soil, and that people just didn't have the energy or the organization to keep it scooped out. And so eventually it just formed around all these constructs, which are still there, and possibly some people are even going in them. I've heard stories of renegade Egyptologists digging in someone's backyard and finding, you know, some of these things. And I think that's really what it is, and I just don't think that anyone in power is willing to consider it. And I think it's the finish. It's the great civilization that existed in the time period before the dawn of the Iron Age. I think, you know, Fulcanelli actually is the first person to point out that the Sphinx was much older and been eroded by water. People think that it was Schwaller de Lubitsch, but actually it was Fulcanelli 20 years before Schwaller who points it out in his book. And so he knows. And also, you know, Gurdjieff found a pre-sand map of Egypt, which sent him on his journey. So when you go to the Coptic Museum in Cairo, you can see proof that even the Coptics know about some of the things that are going on underneath the ground in Egypt.
And those secrets that are under there, I would love to find out what they are. I sometimes suspect, Jay, that maybe the Egyptians have already found it and have taken out some of those important relics. We'll be back. We'll open up the phone lines now with our guest, Jay Widener, right here on Coast to Coast AM.